We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHP. It's Tuesday, March 28th, 2023. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Marco Marquez. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks to Mike DeCourcy, Gary Lezak, Jamie Bluma, and we just talked to Royals assistant GM Scott Sharp. Jared Sutton will talk March Madness with us in the next segment. But right now, we're very happy to have on the show Bonnie Bernstein, who everyone knows from her work over the years, CBS, ESPN, and so many great events that she was a part of. And now she's on the show with us today. Bonnie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Stephen and Nate. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it, and we're going to talk about She Got Game, Inspiring Women Inspired by Sports, and you're talking to a couple of girl dads here,
yeah.
So I have I have got twin 14-year-old girls, which have challenged everything that I've ever known about life itself, but they're athletes. They both, I've been lucky enough over the last several years to coach them in basketball. And one runs track, and the other plays volleyball and softball, so it's been awesome. And Nate, your daughter is...
Yeah, my daughter Ophelia is 10 years old, and she is a part of the soccer team, the Glowing Dragons, that I coach.
And Glowing Dragons, because what other kinds of dragons are there, really?
Right.
Well, we found out there's also a Sparkle Dragon team in the league that's one of our rivals. We point out the Glowing Dragons are way better than Sparkle Dragons. But honestly, Bonnie, because to tie into what you're about to do, I've spent the month going over Women's History Month with the Glowing Dragons and trying to present female role models in the world of sports. In fact, last night, We have a close friend of ours in town named Allie Trost Martin, who is now the play-by-play announcer for Sporting Kansas City. And as far as I know, she's the first female play-by-play announcer in Major League Soccer history. And she came and talked to the girls yesterday and told them about careers in sports and all the things they could dream of growing up. There were not really any female play-by-play announcers when I was a kid growing up, and now you're seeing more and more of that. And you could just see the look on these girls' faces when they – when they see a role model like that, like the wheels start turning a little bit of all the different things they can dream of growing up. How cool is that?
It's so cool. And so, Nate, here's what I would love for you to do with the Glowing Dragons.
All right.
Let's pull together a She Got Game listening party, and the girls can listen to some of the episodes, and then I can hop on Zoom, and we can have a whole conversation about the interviews that I did with these amazing women and just sort of keep that theme going. Because while, yes, it's Women's History Month, I think what we've learned through five decades now of Title IX is that not only has that legislation opened up doors for girls and young women to play sports, but what it's done is empowered them with incredibly valuable life skills that will help them and propel them through not only life and their careers. And the cool thing about She Got Game is that It's actually research-inspired. So Ernst & Young and ESPNW came out with a study several years ago, and one of the most fascinating findings that I found is that 94% of all women in C-suites across America, your CEOs, CFOs, COOs, they all played sports growing up. And they create that link between the life skills, the leadership, the coachability, the teamwork, the resilience, the time management, the accountability, all the things that we learn through sports that we can then take and leverage to achieve professional success. So, you know, Nate, if the Glowing Dragons want to listen to She Got Game, they're going to hear from women whose names they probably know, like Leila Ali, you know, arguably one of the women's great, one of the world's greatest female boxers, or Shawn Johnson, who is an Olympic gymnast, who they probably don't know have gone on to do great things in business. But then women in entertainment and in industry, like I'm sure many of them don't know that Chelsea Clinton, for example, played sports, or that Amy Trask, who to date, and Chiefs fans will probably remember that Amy to date is the only female NFL CEO. She's with the Raiders, and she learned teamwork from riding. So there are all of these amazing stories that we glean from the women that we profile in She Got Game that would resonate with glowing dragons everywhere.
I'm going to put them on the podcast for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And you can find it on Audible, by the way. And I know we'll talk a little bit more about it. But if anybody's interested, if you're an Audible subscriber, you can get She Got Game, Inspiring Women Inspired by Sports. And if you're not an Audible subscriber, all of these episodes are 20 to 30 minutes. They're super snackable, so you can get a 30-day free trial on Audible and listen to them all.
You know, and you said some great things about what playing sports can mean, and just to any kid, but especially like what I've seen is, coaching my girls, and I coach their school basketball team. Number one, it was just a way for me to spend more time with them. But also number two, I got to know their friends and see, you know, the relationships that they would have with each other and how they, you know, those developed on and off the floor. But like I would notice and things that I would take note of is how the self-confidence grew, right?
Yeah.
And being able to not only believe in yourself, but believe in your teammates and be able to trust your teammates. And all these, like, tent poles that we look for in successful people and successful children that are provided there in sports. And I think sometimes that, you know, the people that don't get it and don't understand how important it is, like you said, it's the lessons, not just that help you in sports, but that you hold on to that help you, whether it's in school, furthering your education, or pursuing whatever profession you want. Those are so important because that really does develop the base, right? That develops everything, that foundation that successful kids need to understand that, you know, there are ways that you learn how to work hard and how to, like you said, be a great teammate and put forth and invest in something, invest in yourself and get that payoff. There's so many lessons that the kids, especially young girls, can learn from playing sports, and I'm glad you highlight that.
Oh, 100%. And here's the thing, Stephen and Nate. It's the podcast, yes, it absolutely 100% is for girls and young women who are playing sports. But it's also a podcast for all the girl dads out there who are listening today who are just like you. And for all the girl moms, many of whom are Title IX beneficiaries themselves. Because we tout, and of course, rightfully so, how many doors Title IX has opened for girls and young women. What we don't talk about enough is that even though there are more girls and young women playing sports than ever before, there are still exiting sports at a higher frequency and an earlier age than boys. Now, why is that? There are lots of different reasons. It could be, you know, lack of scholarship, lack of professional opportunities. Girls go through puberty. Their bodies change. They're bullied. There's still a stigma out there, guys, where it's detrimental to women who want to play sports because people will say, oh, if you play sports, you're going to look too much like a man. Or, you know, there's this negative stigma out there. But what a series like She Got Game does for girl dads like you guys and girl moms or aunts or uncles or grandmas or grandpas is it facilitates a different type of discussion with your girls. Like, yes, you want to play, you love being a part of a team, you're trying to win a championship, but even if you're not a championship caliber athlete, there is still such an extraordinary benefit in continuing to play as long as you can because it tees you up for life. And that messaging, I think, reaches a much broader audience because the reality is there are so few of us who are elite enough athletes to be able to relate at all of the athletes, male and female, that we love and emulate and put on a pedestal. But this sort of messaging reaches a much deeper and broader audience.
Tell me more about the conversation with Leila Ali, because I'm a huge...
You're a boxing fan.
Yeah, I used to box. I grew up boxing. And one of my favorite boxers of all time is her father, of course, Muhammad Ali. And she had, you know, that's almost impossible to try to live up to that name in that world. And she did it, and she became super successful at a time where, I mean, it was like her and Chrissy Martin. There was just a handful of female boxers that were trailblazers that really carried that sport into acceptance. So not only was she carrying her father's name in that sport, but she was one of the first true female boxers that became a superstar, that was a main eventer. And like you noted, you know, she also went on to great things outside of boxing. So I, looking at her and how much pressure there must have been, I mean, she did it all, and she made it. It wasn't easy, but she made it look easy. And I'm just curious to hear more about. I'm really looking forward to hearing that conversation.
Yeah, well, Leila, hers was one of my. I was about to say hers is one of my favorite episodes. I love them all, but the dynamic between me and Leila was a little bit different than a lot of these women because I think aside from Shawn Johnson and if you're a WWE fan, Bianca Belair, who's, you know, right now the top of the top among women in WWE, Leila didn't even start boxing until she was 18. And when she started boxing, her dad was vehemently opposed. And so because Leila got a late start and because she's a beautiful, striking woman, everybody felt like all of the cards were stacked against her. The pressure of being Muhammad Ali's daughter, the fact that she was starting late, and the inner strength and the commitment that she had to achieve very quickly the level that she did, to become a championship-level fighter, and then take everything she learned from the ring and completely rebrand herself. You want to talk about somebody who completely pivoted? If you look at Leila Ali now, she has a whole lifestyle portfolio. She's got a supplement brand, a whole line of spices. She has a clothing line. She's obviously a very successful motivational speaker. She's got a cookbook. Got all of these things going on. She's been on home improvement shows, and there's a younger contingent of our population that knows Leila Ali as this lifestyle megastar who don't even know that she was a boxer. And so hearing her story and how she was able to leverage everything she learned as a boxer to thrive in the professional side of her life outside the ring was just completely fascinating. And then we also get into, you know, what it's like for her to be a parent to two kids who are athletes. She is married to Curtis Conway, the former Bears receiver. I think he also played for the Jets and the Dolphins. We talk about nutrition, all these sorts of things. So you're going to listen to Layla's episode, and you'll hear a lot of the boxing stuff that you really want to hear about, but you will be surprised about all of the things we talk about that you never would have anticipated we broach with somebody like Leila Ali.
We're visiting with Bonnie Bernstein, and the Audible series is called She Got Game, and I'm going to be, you know, recommending this to the Glowing Dragons very soon. Some of the names that I see on the list, too, that I think is very interesting, Bonnie, Julie Ehrman, founder of Angel City FC. That's the NWSL team in Los Angeles, the largest female ownership group for a female sports team. I think that there's a lot of celebrities, and I think Natalie Portman's one of the owners of that team as well. I've heard her talk about it. And here in Kansas City, we've got the KC Current, and Chris and Angie Long are the principal owners, but one of the owners is also Patrick Mahomes' wife, Brittany. And maybe we should say Brittany is Patrick Mahomes' husband, you know, or Brit, yeah. You know, do it the other way around. I'm doing it backwards. But the point being is that the female, God, I really butchered that. I'm looking at his face.
We all know
his face.
Bonnie, I'm so confused by what he's saying, but well, that's why I get it. Yeah, right.
Brittany Mahomes, the owner, happens to be have a husband who plays football. Yes. Is the way I meant to put that.
That's where you're going.
Yeah. but the talking about representation and all those things, for say the Glowing Dragons or Steven's daughters, who are these incredible basketball players. Not only do they have female role models that are playing the sports, but to have females all the way up to the position of ownership and how that informs things. How interesting was it to do those types of interviews?
Well, they were fascinating because that speaks to the Ernst & Young study that was really the inspiration for the series. And I'll take it one step further. So Julie is one of the founders of Angel City. She played college basketball at WashU in St. Louis. Sheila Johnson is the first female black billionaire. She was one of the co-founders of BET and then sold it to Viacom, but she's also the only woman to hold ownership stakes in three pro sports teams. So they're all D.C.-based, the Washington Wizards, Capitals, and Mystics. And then Danny Garcia is the only woman to have an ownership stake in an entire league. She owns the XFL along with Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson. And Danny was a college rower. Sheila grew up playing tennis and broke the color barrier as the first black female cheerleader in the history of the University of Illinois.
Wow.
But she talks about when she played tennis, how she learned to be competitive. And if you fast forward to the fact that literally no woman had ever owned a pro sports team until she bought into the Wizards, Capitals, and Mystics, just think about how competitive a landscape that is in a world dominated by men and sports ownership. So we have three women in the ownership suites, and they all talk about how there is this movement. Like, well, if we're going to stay in the AFC West, we can talk about the Denver Broncos and their new ownership group that includes Condoleezza Rice. So we're starting to see more and more of that. Let's just think about when we were growing up, guys. The only woman in ownership I could think of was Georgia Frontieri with the Rams. Mm-hmm. That was it, right? And so I think every single one of these stories tells girls and women a couple of things and empowers a sort of conversation for girl dads and girl moms that, you know, if we take and harness everything we learned in sports, that enables us to wade some really challenging waters. I mean, when I started out in broadcasting in sports, there weren't a lot of women. And there have been, and still continue to be, now that I'm sort of pursuing the entrepreneur route, times when you feel like you were alone in a boat paddling upstream. Every single one of the women in She Got Game talks about that very same feeling, how they've all been told, you can't, you shouldn't, you're not good enough, your ideas are too big, you're rocking the boat, stay in your lane. Every single one of these women have faced those conversations and those doubters, and they have channeled what they've learned through sports to push through that and thrive in their respective careers. And it's so inspirational and aspirational. And the other cool thing is that Audible has been so amazing, and they're actually making contributions to a few different youth sports organizations in Newark, New Jersey, where they're based, to open up doors for girls to play sports. So we're not only telling, you know, inspirational stories, but this series is also a content play that has real impact, which is amazing.
It's an Audible original, She Got Game, Inspiring Women Inspired by Sports. Hosted and executive produced by Bonnie Bernstein. All right, my final question for you, since we're talking about women's sports, and I know you're upset about part of this because I know that you're Maryland, you're graduating from Maryland, and so it's so great too because now like both of my boys, I have a 25-year-old and a 19-year-old, and they're getting too old to watch sporting events with dad. They want to watch with their friends or whatever. But my girls, it's right in their wheelhouse. We've been watching the women's tournament. And I was, hey.
Are they big Caitlin Clark fans?
Right. There we go. And so we're Mizzou fans in the SEC, so we don't root for South Carolina. But they are great. They're undefeated. And so I know they in Maryland, gave them all they wanted. We're rooting for Maryland, but South Carolina wins. And now they set up this game on Friday. Caitlin Clark with a 40-point triple-double.
Triple-double, right?
Iowa to their first Final Four. So then Friday night in the Final Four, You got the undefeated South Carolina team against Caitlin Clark and the best player, the biggest show in women's college basketball, and they're talking about maybe this could be the most watched Final Four game in the women's tournament, who knows, in a long time or ever. I mean, I know that you wanted Maryland there, but this is like, it almost feels like this is something that, hey, even if you haven't been watching this tournament, you better watch this because this is going to be something special on Friday night.
Well, Caitlin is a transformative player. If you haven't had the opportunity to watch her, she is must-see television. She really is. And what Dawn Staley has done with South Carolina, I mean, they've got two bigs that are 6'7 and 6'5. They are ginormous down on the low block, and the best defensive team in the country. And just everything that South Carolina is embodies Dawn as she was as a player. But I also think, too, it's part of a larger movement. If you look at what's going on in women's sports, like, yes, it's Kalen, yes, it's Iowa, yes, Kim Mulkey's done amazing things going from Baylor to LSU and taking them to the Final Four, you know, we've mentioned Staley. But on a broader level, if you look at the fact that ratings are up in women's sports, attendance is up in women's sports, more platforms are acquiring the rights to broadcast and showcase women's sports. There are more brands than ever that are jumping on the train to support women's sports. So what we're seeing is an uptick in visibility, in interest, and in investment. And I think what we're going to see with the South Carolina-Iowa matchup is really just scratching the surface. We're going to talk about this game 5 years from now, 10 years ago, and hopefully what those ratings will show on Friday night will become the norm a few years down the road.
We can't wait to watch it. Hey, Bonnie, we appreciate your time again. Tell people how they can listen to She Got Game, Inspiring Women Inspired by Sports.
Yes, sir. You can find it on Audible. If you're a subscriber, just go to Audible. You can search She Got Game. You'll find it there. If you're not a subscriber, you can get a 30-day free trial and hear all of our episodes. They're all 20 to 30 minutes. And if you would be so kind, please, 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 rate and review with the podcast, because these things are very important in podcast world. And I would be so immensely appreciative. And, guys, thank you so much for taking some time to shine a light on what we're doing and share it with your audience. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. We'd love to have you on again in the future sometime if we can make it happen. But and we appreciate what you're doing for women's sports and doing, you know, giving something more for us to listen to as girl dads, because we're trying to be the best girl dads we can. And it ain't easy, but we're doing our best. So thank you so much.
That's awesome. And go Glowing Dragons, because I'm just
that?
Like now completely obsessed with the name.
If we can, I'm going to get them on this show, and if we can get you on a Zoom with those girls, that would be amazing sometime, Bonnie. So that would be
absolutely
great.
Absolutely, let's plan on doing that. That sounds great.
Thanks, Bonnie. That's
all right. Have a great day.
You do the same thing. That's Bonnie Bernstein. She's awesome. So, and that, I'm not kidding about that. Friday night, I can't wait to watch that with my girls. Marco just pointed at me. I don't know what that means, but I just...
Yeah. That, dude, incredible basketball player.
But that's like the kind of matchup you look for.
The storyline.
The undefeated, unbeatable, of course they're going to be national champions versus, oh, hey, I just led Iowa to the first Final Four in 30 years, and I just dropped a 40-point triple-double.
Right.
Right, and so we'll be rooting for Iowa.
And she told us somebody to shut up because they were down by 17.
Right.
Yeah, that was great. You're down by 15. Shut up.
Yeah. That's right.
You know, so, I once had dinner with Bonnie Bernstein.
Yeah. Leave her alone, dude. For real.
What? I didn't say anything because I didn't expect. I don't think she would probably remember that, but I remembered it because she was Bonnie Bernstein, mega star.
Time
on
to,
CBS.
Time to break.
It was in the Yankees press club.
Mm-hmm.
She did not steal my seat the way that Susan Waldman did.
Right. That's exactly
She was actually very nice.
You want to talk to Jarrett Sutton?
I've once had dinner with Jarrett Sutton.
Yeah, he probably didn't remember that either. Back after this on WHP.
You ready, Mace? What you know about going out, head west, red legs, TVs, all up in the headrest.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHP. Thank you to all of our guests, Mike DeCourcy, Gary Lezak, Jamie Bluma, Royals assistant GM Scott Sharp, Bonnie Bernstein, Now we talk to Jared Sutton. What's up, Sut? How you doing?
I'm good, guys. What's going on?
Oh, man, nothing.
Nothing. Good up for opening day.
Do you love Caleb?
Do I love Caleb?
Caleb Love.
I do. I've always been a fan of Caleb Love.
You want him?
Are you subscribed to Caleb Love?
Bring it on. Do you? Yeah. At least there's some talk that Mizzou's a possibility. Would you be thrilled with that, or what's your reaction?
I'd be okay with it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's a talent. He's still just 21 years old, by the way. So I know he's a junior, but he's young for his class. He carried North Carolina to the national championship game 2 years ago. I know last year didn't go how he probably wanted it to go, but big-time scorer, really good off the dribble, strong physical guard, and definitely someone that I think Dennis Gates probably is looking at just because of his ability to get a shot and create his own, and he's older for his class. So, older in terms of being a junior, and I think that's something that this staff is looking at is – guys that are older, guys that are in the portal that can play, that want to come and win right away. So I think that's something where Caleb Love's probably on that list of guys that they're looking at. But it's still somewhat early in the portal process, actually. I know there's guys continuing to put their names in the portal. So this is going to be kind of ongoing. And, I think they'll do their best to kind of evaluate everybody and put the roster together and hopefully address some areas that I think they're really wanting to address, which they've already shown in terms of getting size and hopefully trying to find some guys that also can rebound the ball.
What do you think about Luther Burden tweeting M-I-Z at Caleb Love?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love
that's
it.
Right.
It's just funny. This is like the new era where we're in. I saw that and I kind of had some flashbacks to when DGB was on campus when we were playing.
Oh, no.
And, just kind of the tie-in of, it doesn't just have to be, athletes in your sport. It can be other athletes that kind of get you excited and kind of can recruit you as well. So I didn't mind it. I loved it.
I know you said it's early, but Dennis Gates did not wait to land his first player out of the transfer portal. Colorado State senior guard John Tonjay, who spent 4 years in Fort Collins and played 122 games, he's committed to Mizzou to play his final year of college basketball. 14.6 points per game, 47.3% from the field, and 38.9% from the three-point line. 6'5" guard, also averaged just under 5 rebounds a game. A big guard, a veteran who could shoot. Your thoughts on Tonjay brought in to perhaps replace Des Moines Hodge or Golston or a little bit of both or whatever. Dennis Gates did not wait long to land his first prize.
Yeah, and again, another older player. He's got 1 year of eligibility. I think he really starred in his role, and he actually, for being in the Mountain West tournament, I was actually out at their first round game. It was a close win they had against Fresno State. And he played really well. I think he had 20-5 in that game.
Let's go!
He's a guy that can score it, and he rebounds. He rebounds his position pretty well. I know there were some other schools involved with him in the portal, Arkansas being one. So the fact Dennis Gates is able to land him, I think is a great first get, and it's a good start. Obviously, you're losing Des Moines Hodge and DeAndre Golston. I hate putting comparisons on any player. I think if he fulfills a role that's probably vacant. I think that's accurate. Tonjay is very different than DeAndre Golston, and I think he's also different than Des Moines Hodge as well. But the reality is he is a shooter. He's got really good size. He's strong. He's physical. I do think he can do some things off the bounce, and he can go play above the rim, which I think is really impressive. Some of the clips I've seen from him, he's got very sneaky athleticism. So I like it. This is, again, addressing older players. I have to go back to that because it feels – I was just on a call yesterday with a Power 5 assistant coach who was talking about, look, I think every school is evolving to the fact that college basketball – you want to identify freshmen, you want to recruit well on the high school front, but more and more, you're going to have to hit the portal and to win in March and to win in the NCAA tournament. Experience really matters, and I think that's going to be a trend, and that's something Dennis Gates and his staff are going to look at. They were very good last year hitting the portal, and I think they're going to look at it differently this year than last year, too, by the way. I think they feel like they've put themselves in a great place with a great year coming off the 25-win season. They made the tournament. Dennis Gates has definitely put his name on the map, and I think that's something players are going to look at, and especially just how connected this group was. I think Jerome Tang's going to be in the same conversation. You know, the energy, they're very progressive, forward-thinking coaches, and I think that's really going to bode well for players that are looking at the portal and looking at where they want to go. Gates is in on other guys, too. Like, this is just getting started. I'm curious to see what else they do. You know, is Eddie Lampkin coming? That's a big one for me.
Because
you address size at 6'11", and, you know, he's 265, 70 pounds. So you in terms of competing in the SEC, you got to have that length and the strength to play in the league. And I think they just want to take the roster to another level. I hope that's what they're looking at, because they did so well last year with what they put together in terms of their roster. And I think they know they got to take it to an even another level.
A whole another level.
Right. That's right.
By the way, recruiting in 2023, the coaching staff had a Zoom with Eddie Lampkin the other day. So that's how you start things out. Also, you got to tell the truth on this show, Jared Sutton. Was the Power 5 assistant that you were talking with Dickie Nutt by any chance? Was that the person?
It was not.
Should have been.
Coach Nutt's the best, but no, it was not him.
Missed opportunity
Steven
there.
Steven says should have been.
Missed opportunity.
Okay,
for sure.
I'll set this up, and I'll speak for Nate here. Earlier in the show, Nate said, even if UConn wins their fifth national championship since 1999, they are not a blue blood, and they don't deserve to breathe the same air as Kansas. Your response?
Ooh, man. Well, I'm starting to think, did Nate really say that?
Yeah, he was thinking it. I could see it in his eyes, buddy. Trust me. Yeah.
It'd be impressive. I think the most impressive is they do it with three different coaches in their last three championships.
I'm trying to tell him.
If they do get it done. You know, UConn is a team that I look back and, you know, I got knocked out by UConn my freshman year for a chance to go to the Final Four with Kemba Walker team and the, you know, Okafor team and Price.
Hey, Jared,
Sticks.
Unnecessary to bring that up, all right?
I'm sorry.
We didn't need to go down that deep, okay?
Hey, I just got to say, I got a ton of respect for the UConn program. You know, I think they're a winning team, and they've done it with different coaches, different players. They've had a lot of talent come through there. I think it's actually very tough when Geno's on the other side and the women's program is so dominant. You know, it's almost like it's flipped in terms of the pressure on the men's side. So, you know, the fact that they're here, they're a very good basketball team, 29-win team. They got all the pieces to do it this year. They're playing their best basketball. It was so impressive what they did against Gonzaga. Was not expecting that at all. And they're finally getting some play from the point guard position, which was always kind of the holdup for me was, do they have an actual true point guard? But they're doing that more with Andre Jackson playing more point, and they share the load with Tristan Newton, who's a senior that is that's playing a lot better and playing, you know, over the last month or so, really giving UConn a lot in his role. So it's a good team. I think they're the favorite for sure. But as we've seen in this tournament, that doesn't really matter. It's what's going to make this Final Four fun to watch because I think they're. Are other teams that could, especially on the other side with Florida Atlantic and San Diego State, that I think is a very interesting matchup if UConn meets with either one of those teams.
Yeah, so the conversation that we had, Jarrett, was based on, to me, like, yes, of course I would love to have four or even five national titles. The weird thing about UConn, because it started when Stephen asked me, why isn't UConn considered a blue blood like these other schools? And I'm not saying they shouldn't be, because if you've won four national titles in that short of a period of time, you certainly deserve to be considered a blue blood. But I think what's weird for UConn is then, as Marco pointed out, like they just recently had a 5-year stretch where they didn't go to the NCAA tournament.
Right.
It's the weird, like, the lack of kind of consistent presence that most of the time you associate with blue bloods. Yeah, like North Carolina might miss the tournament every once in a while, but more often than not, you expect them to be a contender to win the ACC and a high seed. Even like with Calipari's teams, they're always like pretty much in the tournament, and maybe they're an 8-9 seed, but they've got lottery picks all around and names that you know and all that. And the thing about Kansas is, you never even wonder if they're going to make the tournament. Like, you just know they're going to be a factor every single year. And I don't know. It's just, isn't that weird? Like, it's so hard to explain how Connecticut can have that many titles without being consistently in the tournament every year, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, the point about the blue blood thing, like I look at Indiana, for example, you know, I know like the history and the tradition and, you know, the Bob Knight experience of what they, you know, going to 8 Final Fours and I think it was 20 plus Sweet 16s. Like, they're considered still a blue blood, but they went through a 10-year stretch where they weren't in the Sweet 16, and they missed out on the tournament as well, and they've had numerous coaching changes, and, you know, I think Woody's done a great job to get them where they were this year, and they're, you know, a very good team in the Big Ten. But, you know, when I look at UConn, yeah, the point's valid, I think, of they did go through a lull there, and I do think when you think of Duke and, I mean, look at North Carolina this year, right? I mean, that to be preseason, you know, top of the number one team in the country, and they don't make the tournament, and they really struggle. It's 1 year, but you put North Carolina in this conversation for just the tradition, the history, the amount of times they've got there, and obviously the championships. I think blue blood to me is the history of the program, and I think UConn has a very rich tradition, and they've also put out a lot of great players that have gone on to play in the NBA, like Ray Allen comes to mind, Rip Hamilton. They've had a lot of players come through their program. So it's another thing I look at. I think your definition of blue blood can be, you know, just a little bit more on what team has done the most within like that scope of the last 15, 20 years, whatever you want it to be. But if you look at, you know, the history of the program, longevity of the program, a lot of the schools in the blue blood conversation, they've done so much, and that tradition is rich. And I think UConn would say that they are that. They did change leagues, and they've done really well in the Big East, and they're back in the Final Four. So I would say that I think they're in the conversation to be a blue blood. But if you look at how they stack up against some of these other schools, you know, other schools have probably had a little bit more success, I would say. So, you know, for me, I consider them a blue blood, but I consider a good amount of teams to be in this conversation. In the not necessarily at the top with the Duke and the Kansas and North Carolina and the Kentuckys, but they're right there. Michigan State's right there. Indiana's right there. I still think they're programs you think of when you think of college basketball.
Who's going to win the game between San Diego State and FAU?
I really like San Diego State, actually. I want to say Florida Atlantic just because they're the hot team. I don't want to call them a Cinderella because they're not. They're a terrific basketball team. They're the winningest team in Division I this season. They've won 4 straight in the tournament, all by single digits. They're a 9 seed. They definitely remind me of that Wichita State team in 2013. They've won 35 games, right? And so they're a winning team. They got all the pieces to do it. San Diego State's defense against Creighton was really impressive. And I go back to the Alabama game where watching that game, I didn't think San Diego State could keep up with Alabama. And they dictated the game, really. And wire to wire, I would say. I think Alabama made some runs. But, you know, San Diego State, just really impressive what they've done to get here, to get to the Final Four. You know, that game against Creighton, an ugly game, I would say. Like, I expected it to be, you know, up in the upper 70s, into the 80s, Creighton can really score, and San Diego State kept them to 56. And the thing about San Diego State is just they're so physical, and around the rim, they just don't give you anything easy. And then, you know, you look at how they played against Creighton, and Matt Bradley didn't do anything. You know, Matt Bradley's their best player by far in terms of guards in March that can get their own shot and make 3-point shots. Matt Bradley didn't really do much of anything in the Creighton game. So for them to win a game and beat a good Creighton team in a close battle, I like San Diego State in this game. San Diego State's 9-0 and games decided by 5 points or less. So I just feel like if this game is close, I just feel like San Diego State has been here a lot and they find ways to win games. So, you know, and you look, San Diego State's top 2 scorers, they're transfers. You know, so going back to our initial conversation around getting older and getting in the transfer portal, like San Diego State found their top 2 scorers in the portal. So it's a fascinating Final Four, and I think San Diego State and Florida Atlantic both deserve to be here. They both put together really strong runs. I'm not going to overlook Florida Atlantic because I like Greenlee, I like Golden, I like those guys in terms of the two that carry Florida Atlantic. I thought their bench was pretty solid against K-State, but I'll give the edge to San Diego State just because I've been so impressed with the physicality, the toughness they play with. They defend everywhere. They can guard and pick and roll. They don't give you anything easy. And, yes, their best player hasn't necessarily played up to the caliber he's capable of playing at. Matt Bradley didn't play really all that well against Alabama, actually, either. So you look at, you know, can he take his game back to being in that 15 to 16 point per game? I think that would really give San Diego State even more of an edge in this game.
What kind of shot do you give Miami against UConn?
Oh, I give them a very much a chance. I think this is the game for me. I think the winner of this should. I think if Miami does beat UConn, they should be the favorite. I know that's probably a given, but you look at Miami's team. They got a bunch of guys on that roster that can create their own shot. They can make threes. They're very athletic. They kind of play a small ball lineup. No, Chet O'Meara's their five, and he's not necessarily what you would look at in terms of a five man. You know, not a seven-footer or anything like that, but he's highly athletic, and you can switch with him everywhere. Same with Jordan Miller, who I know was great in the Texas game, perfect from the field, got to the free throw line. Jordan Miller's gotten so much better. He's an NBA body, NBA athlete. Like, he can do a lot of things versatility-wise. This team's fun because they can do a lot of things where they're a positionless basketball team, if you will. Isaiah Wong can play on the ball. He can play off the ball. Nigel Pack can do the same thing. He can bring the ball up. He can also play the two. And, again, I go back to, like, the Texas game. Isaiah Wong, Nigel Pack combined for 1-for-7 from the three. They only shot 8 threes. And when I think about that, like, Isaiah Wong and Nigel Pack can go off at any point from three. And they didn't really do that in the Texas game. Isaiah Wong is probably one of the best ball handlers and mid-range shooters in college basketball, actually. Like, his ability to get his own shot, create separation. He's got so much wiggle off the bounce. Like, it is so hard to keep him in front. He's very slippery, and it's tough to guard him. I mean, it really is. And he can get to setbacks. He can get to turnaround fadeaways. I mean, he's just got an NBA skill set. And that to me, is really kind of the guy that you got to stop. And Isaiah Wong is very much like Jordan Hawkins gets a lot of conversation because he's such a great shooter. Isaiah Wong is still a very good shooter. He can just do so much more in the mid-range that I think he's more dangerous off the dribble. And Nigel Pack, my gosh, his ability to just play off of Isaiah is so fun to watch. And Jordan Miller kind of fits into this as well, where he can play the three and the four. And if no Chet O'Meara has to come out, they can put Jordan Miller at the five, and they can play small. So the thing that the matchup is so interesting with UConn because UConn's big. And what team sets the pace? What team sets the tone? Because with Connecticut, with Sanogo and Klingon, their seven-footer who comes off the bench, they got elite size. And I think Andre Jackson is a huge in this game. He's not much of a scorer, but he's a great rebounder, and he's an excellent passer. He had 10 assists and no turnovers in the Gonzaga game. How does Miami guard him? Because I think he's the one that creates everything off the dribble. That's how Jordan Hawkins gets his shot. Sanogo is going to be a force around the rim, and I think Miami can hold their own against Sanogo. I think it's the guard play in this game that is going to be so fascinating of how, you know, these two teams, who sets the tone early, and then ultimately who can close. Because I think Miami, as we saw in the Texas game, like, their firepower, they're never out of a game. They can shoot themselves right back into a game. And Jim Larranaga is a great coach, and he's done a lot with these guys. And allowed them to be themselves. Like, they are very much kind of an isolation team. I do not like isolation basketball, really, in college. This team can do that because they have guys that can actually do it. They have guys that can isolate and make plays, and you trust them with the ball to go do things in one-on-one situations. So it's a fun matchup. I'll give the edge to UConn, but I do give Miami a chance to win this game.
Do you like isolation basketball at the pro level?
Yeah. You know, I'll use our team as an example. We're on a 5-game winning streak, and our best isolation player is Brandon Ingram. He is an NBA. I think he's a star in the NBA. He can go get his shot in the mid-range at any time. He's been on a tear in terms of he had a triple-double the other night. We put the ball in his hands and allowed him to be a point guard, and he can pass. He's a terrific passer. He makes plays. I think there's a misconception of in isolation basketball, well, that means I just have to go get my shot. That's not what isolation basketball should mean. It should mean you've got a guy that can go make plays and make reads and is going to make the right play. Brandon can go score it at any time in isolation, but when he is a passer as well, we become so much more lethal and so much more of a threat. We have other guys that get involved. We still throw the ball inside. It's a little old school. We throw the ball to Jonas Valanciunas inside. We allow him to make plays and pass. Like, passing, trusting guys to make plays is so important when you use the word and the term isolation. I think in the NBA, the ball can stick, and that's still a problem sometimes. We've had that problem about a month ago. The ball stuck. Our offensive efficiency was so low because we pounded the dribble. We had way too much dribbling and not enough passing and moving the ball, and we didn't throw the ball inside. So I think it's at any level. I love the question because I think at the NBA level, the college level, even, I mean, obviously at the high school level, ball movement still is a beautiful thing. We saw that in the Kansas State games. When you have a point guard that can really pass and move the ball and is dynamic off the dribble and makes plays for others, it's just amazing how much that just kind of, it just builds and builds and builds. It's contagious. The sharing of the ball is still such a beautiful part of basketball. Isolation does matter at times. Put the ball in your best player's hands. Allow them to go make plays. That does still matter. But again, ball movement, player movement, trust, it builds and builds and builds. And it allows, I think, your team and all five guys on the floor to really play up to their capabilities. It allows them to play freely instead of, let's take Trey Murphy, for example. Don't stick him in the corner. Allow him to move. Allow him to cut. And all of a sudden you look up, he's got 24 points, he's making threes, he's dunking balls, because there's player movement and ball movement, and that's what makes basketball a great thing, no matter if it's the college level or the NBA level.
Jarrett Sutton, thank you for the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy the Final Four.
That's Jarrett Sutton. You enjoy the Final Four. And now Nate Bucati has a message about tacos.
Well, today's Taco Tuesday, Stephen, don't you know?
Watch your mouth.
Celebrate Taco Tuesday the Boulevard way with a squeeze of lime and a pinch of salt. Steven likes a little squeeze and a pinch on Tuesday. I know that much. Our friends at Boulevard Brewing Company have brought back their fan favorite Southwest Boulevard, a thirst-quenching lager with salt and lime. It's a crushable companion to your favorite chips and salsa, and it's available year-round. So head to your local Johnny's Tavern and Tanner's Bar and Grill every Tuesday, like today, to enjoy satisfying specials featuring Boulevard beers and get some tacos while you're at it. Boulevard Brewing Company, Kansas City, Missouri.
Get you two for Tuesday right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Border Patrol has been brought to you by Walker Medical Linen Services, setting the standard in healthcare laundry services for hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in Kansas City. Walker Medical Linen delivers laundry you can depend on. HLAC certified to the highest standards. It's Walker Medical Linen Services, online at walkermls.com.
Bye-bye.